And Paul Ostrander joining us in the studio for the Kenai Conversation this week. And Paul, thank you again so much for finding some time and being with us. I know it's a busy time of year for you.
It is, but thank you for having me, Shailen.
You bet. And I wanted to get started on the conversation talking about, you know, we're jumping into it's budget time, of course. We've heard practically nothing but state budget stories and borough budget stories, but of course cities are doing their budgets right now as well. And wanted to start off the hour talking about, I guess just from an administration standpoint, what are some of the big things that you're paying attention to and sort of at the forefront of your mind as we're developing a budget in the city of Kenai for fiscal year 2020?
Well, you know, we certainly are considering what's going on at the state level. You know, there was some early legislation, primarily with oil and gas tax and fisheries tax, that we certainly paid attention to. They seem to have lost traction at the state level, and looks like funding for both oil and gas and fisheries is going to remain pretty steady for next year. So, you know, while we did pay attention to what's going on in the state, we really looked internally, and I will tell you that the city of Kenai is on really solid financial ground right now. Really prudent fiscal planning for many, many years is, and we're seeing the results of that. So, you know, when we looked at preparing the budget, what we really looked at, well, there's a couple things. From the operational side of things, what we wanted to focus on is making sure that we could continue to fund our operations with existing revenue. So we didn't want to look at raising taxes, either property or sales tax. So we really tried to make sure that we sized our operational budget in a way that we could cover it with existing revenues. And we accomplished that. On the capital side, it was a little bit different in that, you know, we have seen a trend over the last 4 years where capital funding from the state has gone from, well, 5 years ago, the state received over $5 million in capital funding. You know, in the last 3 years, we've received zero, and we don't anticipate receiving any this year. There's a slight possibility the state might actually provide a little bit of capital funding, but at this point, we are projecting another time zero for capital funding. So when we looked at the capital side, we realized that we have to start putting into place a plan where we can start funding this capital from the city revenues. So this year, we did actually provide more capital funding than we have in the past. Actually, to the tune of almost $1.4 million that we're spending on capital. But the focus for capital was on maintaining our existing infrastructure. Really, we see that as our primary responsibility, is making sure that we maintain what we have. And quite frankly, that hasn't been a focus necessarily in the past. But it's important that we focus on it, on maintaining what we have, growing our infrastructure, you know, maybe in a different environment, that might be something that we look at. But right now, it's really about focusing on maintaining our existing infrastructure. One of our big focuses, actually in this budget, is on our water and sewer side. There's been some things that have been deferred for a number of years. We're getting to check those off the list so that we can make sure that we maintain that. It's critical for the residents of the city that continues to run well. So we've really put a lot of focus on that this year.
I'm glad you brought up water and sewer. Maybe this is going to take us in a slightly different direction that I plan to get here to this point eventually. But in talking about, because I've had this conversation about dwindling capital resources from the state level, and how do you then pick up that tab at the local level? There are a lot of different mechanisms that can be exercised. And in Soldotna recently, we saw one example of that where, you know, in flush times, a sports center in Soldotna may very well have made a line item budget for the state and gotten paid for by the state. Nobody would have given it a second thought. We're not in those times right now. So the decision is made to go to the voters, see about putting a bond out for this thing. And it becomes a political question, really, as to whether or not we're going to invest in some of these capital projects. And I'm curious, in looking at the state's finances and what the reality is of capital funding, and we're talking about big things like water and sewer, are there opportunities then for partnerships between Kenai and Soldotna and or with the cities and the borough to do some of these things that would help save some costs? And the other thing is that I'm thinking about is, if there are opportunities for grants and things, that you don't have two similar sized entities going after the same grant for essentially the same thing. Has the budget situation forced more of those kinds of conversations in any way?
Well, you know, there's certainly efficiencies to be gained between Kenai and Soldotna, and we actually are already pursuing some of those. Our council and the Soldotna City Council have shown interest in the water and sewer, specifically, primarily wastewater, and potentially treating all the waste from Soldotna and Kenai here in Kenai. That is something that that our council, Kenai City Council, has looked at and has actually asked our administration to look at more closely, and we will be doing that. Whether or not that's something that happens in the near future, I guess I would say this is probably a longer-term goal, but it makes complete sense that at some point that we do combine some of those and really save money through the efficiencies of that.
You know, in general, I'm curious, what sort of, you know, how far down the road when we're talking about capital projects and capital funding, you know, we understand that financing for those things is shaky today. It's really hard to know, to anticipate what it'll be 5-10 years down the road. How do you continue making those decisions or making those capital priorities in such uncertain times?
Well, actually, that we have put a significant focus on developing a 5-year capital plan at the city, which is not something that we've had in the past. We started developing it last year. It's more refined this year, and we're hopeful that we will get a fully refined 5-year capital plan by this time next year. And really, part of the capital plan is the funding source. And the way we're putting this together right now is we are making assumptions, again, that we're not going to continue to see capital, at least not significant capital funding from the state. So we have to figure out a funding mechanism to maintain our infrastructure and prioritize it for the city of Kenai. And the 5-year capital plan is a critical component of that.
And, you know, in most places that a 5-year capital plan is pretty stock standard procedure, and it's kind of a rolling list, and some things appear on it sort of year after year, and they're long-term items that appear year after year, and things get peeled off the list as they're accomplished or perhaps as they're become lower on a priority as the situation changes. As 5 years seems to be the stock standard, there's not really a whole lot of looking beyond that, simply because who knows what sort of funding mechanisms will be available or what sort of funds in general will be available.
Yeah, certainly on the capital side, we are focused on the five-year window, and that's generally what you do see with cities, really nationwide. It is interesting the variation when you look between cities on how much focus they do put on that 5-year capital plan. Like I said, the city of Kenai has never really had a formalized 5-year capital plan in the past. We're working towards that. Other cities in the state, you know, have been maintaining a 5-year capital plan for many years. You know, but as far as looking beyond 5 years, there are things that the city does look at beyond 5 years, not necessarily in capital, but we have an equipment replacement fund. So all of our large rolling stock, you know, our graders and our dump trucks and those large items like that, we actually have a fund that projects out much farther than 5 years, you know, sometimes as much as 20 or 25 years, and has a funding mechanism. So when it does come time to replace that grader, that we've actually saved for it and are able to purchase it.
Yeah, those are things that you can pretty precisely gauge the useful lifespan of something, and especially when you're talking about equipment. At some point, I'm sure that you will hear from, all right, we've repaired this thing enough. It's time to go.
Yeah, and typically what you do find is when it's that date when the useful life is up, there's always a discussion that happens at that point, because you do project it, but it's possible that, you know, what you thought would last 25 might last 30. So we talk to our shop foreman, you know, we talk to the users of that equipment, and if we can, we always extend that out a little bit longer than what the anticipated life of that equipment is.
We're talking about capital funding and having a focus on maintaining the capital expenditures that have already been made, the infrastructure that's already in place. What are the primary areas of focus for that? I mean, obviously everything that's streets and everything, but is there sort of a ranking as it goes? Streets, something else, something else, something else?
You know, there's not an official ranking, but certainly streets are something that's right, critically important to the residents, and we recognize that. Wastewater and water is again a priority. So some of those core functions of the city is what you really need to focus on. You know, maintaining some of the other things like parks in our parks and recreation department, those are a priority as well. You know, if you were to prioritize it, I would say that, you know, and we actually had the budget discussion with the public here about 6 weeks ago,
right,
I guess. And we actually had a poll there, and we tried to get folks to rank what was the most important services to them. And there was a little bit of information that we were able to glean from that. And I would say folks generally think that, you know, water and sewer and streets are the most important thing as far as capital.
Right. The big stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And it, that really does that. I mean, it makes sense that that's the stuff that you would find important is the stuff that you can't just handle me and you separately on our own. Talking with Paul Ostrander on the Kenai Conversation this week, talking about the city budget. I wanted to get back to the work session that was recently held at City Hall. And this has changed a little bit in recent years where, I mean, the city has long had a work session before the budget just to kind of get a picture out there to the public of what the city's current finances are like and what the plans are for the coming year and you know, obstacles, opportunities, those sorts of things. But the city of Kenai has been doing it a bit differently in terms of really digging into some details, department by department, where these dollars are going. And would you say that's been a help for the city council?
Well, I think it's been really beneficial for the council. You know, our finance director, Terry Eubank, has really been pushing our budget process in a new direction. And his goal, and I've adopted this goal as a city manager, is to change the discussion around the budget in that now we're really focused department by department, not necessarily on how many pencils we buy or how much paper we buy, but more about, you know, what is the mission of that department? What are the measures, the performance measures that we can look at to determine whether or not that department's doing a good job? And then also setting goals that are attainable and measurable for each department. So now, if you look at our budget book, it's really every single department has the same information in their narrative where they establish goals, they let the council know whether they've accomplished those goals, and then they have performance measures right in there that show how they're performing as a department. So the discussion at the work session used to be really the finance director and the city manager having a discussion with the council about, you know, the budget and what's in the budget. And now what we've done is we've shifted it where every department head comes and actually has a discussion with the council. And it's primarily focused, again, on their performance measures, their mission, and the goals and objectives that they have as a department. So you see the conversation shift from one that talks about specific line items within the budget to more of a discussion about what we're doing as a city and how well are we doing it.
So that's a change that you've seen that's been noticeable just in terms of the actual structure of the conversation that happens. It's not about dollar amounts, of course, are still a core part of it, but it's less about the specific dollar amount for a given department and more about what are the resources necessary to fulfill the mission of that department.
Right. And you're right. The money part is still very critical. And, you know, we have done multiple things this year to try to maintain the expenditures of the city. You know, we just completed our first efficiencies initiative where we looked department by department to look at ways that we could save not only money, but also hours in those departments. And it was significant, you know, the annualized savings that we realized through the first year of that is going to be about $65,000 per year, every year going forward. And there's always things that we're looking at as far as restructuring of departments, ways that we could potentially do things better. Those are always things that we're looking at administratively, but yet you're right. The discussion at the work session in particular is more about what our department's heads are doing and within their department, how their departments are functioning. And it's a discussion with council about that. And I think the council sees it as very valuable because they get better insight into what happens within each one of these departments. And it also reflects really well in the department heads too, because the council can see at that point, you know, how good these department heads are. I mean, we have a really quality group at the city, and I think the council sees that through this discussion.
Well, and I mean, anytime you're as a department head, as someone sort of in charge of things, for lack of a better term, when you're sort of quizzed on what are you doing, how are you doing it, how is it working, that keeps you on your toes and keeps you really engaged with the day-to-day when you know you have those questions coming down the pike, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly gives those department heads ownership of their budget and ownership of explaining to council why what they do is important.
Paul Ostrander joining us on the Kenai Conversation this week, talking about the budget process for the city of Kenai getting kicked off, looking ahead to 2020, some of the things that are being considered by the city's administration as that process gets underway. You know, I wanted to talk about, you know, the city of Kenai has a number of different kind of standalone funds. There's the airport fund, there's the personal use fishery fund, a number of these different funds. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how those play into the overall budget process, sort of without getting specifically into one or the other, just in general, kind of what are they for? What are they to sort of defer general fund payments? Are they to, you know, setting things aside that they can sort of pay for themselves rather than taking money out of the general fund to pay for this, that, and the other thing? What are sort of some of the goals with these funds on a broader level?
Yeah, so they're standalone funds that represent a certain function of the city. You know, a good example you brought up is the personal use fishery fund. So that is established so that we can account for the specific costs of the personal use fishery. So it tracks the revenues associated with the personal use fishery and also the expenditures of that. So rather than paying for it out of the general fund, we wanted to separate it so that we could account for it and have a much better accounting of how that fund is performing as far as revenues and expenditures and how they meet. We also have, a fund is water and sewer, for example, and that's mm-hmm. the utility that is paid for primarily from user fees. So it doesn't make sense to pay for that through the general fund. So we created a separate fund, the water and sewer, so that we can track it and account for it based on those user fees.
I don't know how easy of a question this is or how easy it is to get all that data together, but what is the size of all these funds put together? Is there a ballpark number for that?
For all of the funds?
Yeah.
We can certainly provide you an exact number. I don't have it, but...
I would imagine it's pretty big, though, because we're talking about investment funds and all these different things.
Yeah, so there's a couple of really large that are funds that are primarily investment funds.
Right.
And we talk about the airport land or the airport permanent fund and the general fund permanent fund. And both of those are funds that the revenues from those funds are from sale of either land that is owned by the general fund or land that is for the benefit of the airport. All those lands are owned by the city, but because the FAA restrictions on some of those lands, when lands that are sold that were deeded to the city by the FAA, they must benefit the airport directly. So we've got a large airport permanent fund and also a general land fund. And those are invested primarily so that the investment proceeds from that can be used to support the airport in the case of the airport fund or the general fund in the case of the general fund permanent fund.
Having a lands permanent fund, that's something we've heard talk about at the borough level as well, sort of recently. And just sort of this idea of an entity putting the lands that it's been bequeathed, whether that's through the state or the feds or whatever, putting those lands to use in a revenue generating way. How would you characterize the city of Kenai's sort of situation in terms of getting the lands that it does have to work on an ongoing basis as opposed to, selling it and having one transaction and it's done?
Yeah, well, either way, you know, we continue to see proceeds from those lands. You know, if we go ahead and sell
with property taxes and such, well, yeah.
That, plus also the way that we invest that permanent fund. You know, we pull, it's basically a POMV model. You hear about that a lot of time at the state. We mm-hmm. have a POMV model for our airport fund where in the past we've pulled 5% of the 5-year trailing average off of that fund to utilize for operations of the airport. So we've peeled millions of dollars over the year off of that fund without impacting the principal or the corpus of that fund. So it's continued to grow and we've been able to pull off money every year on it.
Living off the interest. Yeah.
Now, we did just change that. The council did just change that to ratchet it back a little bit. The last 10 years have been incredible performance from the stock markets, and we benefited from that. Projections going forward indicate that we probably can't continue to pull 5% off of it. So we actually bumped that back to approximately 4%. From that airport permanent fund now going forward.
I'm curious about this because the stock market is... It's incredible to me that it can be a mystery to some people. And for some people, it's like, you know, the Oracle of Omaha has no problem. Mr. Buffett has no problem figuring out how the stock market works. Some of us don't understand it quite as well. Is there a lag time in looking at performance of stocks and how those funds are doing? And when you make a decision, like maybe we need to throttle this down because we've been on fire for 10 years, it can't last forever. Is there a lag time in sort of making those decisions, or how do you sort of schedule those things out and reevaluate those?
So we're on a schedule to look at it every 10 years, and that's what we plan on. So we have a firm that manages our funds, Alaska Permanent Capital, and they just went through that analysis this year. So they looked at the trailing last 10 years. They also looked at performance back to the early 1900s, and then they tried to project what they see as happening going forward. So they looked at it. They came to us with recommendations. We provided those recommendations to council, and they felt they were appropriate, and that's why we changed it.
And again, the idea being that the stock market's great now, might not be quite as great in the future. We need to throttle this back and make sure that these funds are sustainable on some productive level well into the future.
Right. And the other key component of this that we always look at is we want to inflation-proof these funds. So for the next 10 years, we're projecting a 2% inflation per year. So we want to make sure that the principal, or the corpus again, that the spending power of that is the same now or greater in 10 years.
To what degree... I hope I'm constructing this question right. To what degree does having a diverse set of funds like that, does that represent sort of relief from the general fund? And what I mean by that is to what degree does that present opportunities to pay for all these other departments to pay for themselves rather than having additional sales tax, property tax that would go into a general fund and then go to pay for all these things? Pretty big deal.
Yeah, I mean, these permanent funds have been huge for the last 10 years for the city. And definitely without those, I think you would have seen either cuts in expenditures, which means the loss in services, or potentially an increase in taxes, one of the two. So, yeah, I mean, literally millions of dollars, and I don't know how many million, but millions of dollars have gone into the airport and kept the airport in the black for the last 10 years. Without that, almost certainly the general fund would have had to subsidize the airport operations.
I want to, of course, we'll get back into the airport because of, as anybody who's driven by recently knows, there's quite a bit of work going on there right now. We'll get to that. I want to stick with the budget here for just a little bit longer. And I guess what are you seeing as the proposal coming out? Are we looking at cuts at the city level? Are we looking at tax? And you mentioned that trying to do everything without any tax increases. So are we looking at major cuts to get there? What are things looking like?
No, not major cuts to get there. You know, actually, our sales tax numbers have been very healthy over the last year. We're projecting by the end of 19 that we're going to see a 6.5% increase in sales tax revenues year over year. So that's a real benefit. Now, what we did do is when we put the budget together this year, I actually went out to every department head and asked them for a significantly reduced budget. But I also asked them to provide a narrative. So if we cut to this point, what does it look like to residents of the city as far as how does that impact our police services or our fire services or parks and rec? So I was provided that information from every department. And then what we did is we looked at each of those and we weighed the benefits of the cost savings associated with those cuts versus what it looked like from a resident's perspective. You know, how would things look differently for them? So some of those we incorporated in. Many of them we felt that the impacts to services outweighed the benefits of the cost savings. So we did go... we did look to put the budget together from a very conservative perspective, and we did actually manage to cut a significant amount of our operational budget. However, when you consider the increasing costs in healthcare and the inherent increases that you're going to see from the personnel perspective, we do see a slight increase year over year for this budget. But the reality is it's less than 1% of an increase. And when you consider that our healthcare costs alone were up over 10%, we did, I think, a really good job of maintaining the level of spending as much as possible, even with those increased pressures that we see as far as personnel costs.
I'm glad you brought up the personnel costs, because it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a municipality or a business or any entity that has employees. Those employee costs, and specifically healthcare costs, my entire career in journalism, it seems like, has been every time you talk to somebody who's got a budget to deal with, that this is the main sticking point, is how do you continue to pay for these ever-rising costs? And I guess I'll just kind of open it up. What are those costs like? How are they rising? Are there any options, any realistic options to try to rein those in? There are lots of options, but
sorry, the long pause there, because healthcare is such a huge issue.
I know it. Yeah.
And it's Shailen, frankly, it's really frustrating from, you know, my perspective and someone in my job, because so much of what happens in the healthcare industry is completely out of our control. We do what we can to control it, but right now we are insured through a regular insurance provider. We're not self-insured. So we go to that insurance provider every year, and they provide us, you know, what the change in premiums are going to be. This year, for example, when they initially came to us, they said, well, it looks like because of the cost history associated with the city of Kenai, you're going to see a 23% increase in your healthcare costs this year. And that generally is the way the conversation starts. And then we continue to negotiate with them until we get it down to a point that we feel is reasonable. However, I'll tell you, reasonable in the healthcare world is not comparable to reasonable anywhere else in the world.
Right.
We consider a reasonable healthcare increase at 10%. And that's what we budget for every single year. Is that sustainable? I don't think it is. I don't think we can sustain 10% increases in healthcare every year. Eventually, it's going to push municipalities, private businesses, everyone underwater. So that's why I paused initially, because it's such a huge discussion that I think, you know, it is well outside of our control, really. Mm-hmm. We can try to manage as much we can at the local level, but really this is an issue that's nationwide that needs to be resolved at some point.
Well, and you know, something that I found really interesting, and this is going way back to the last primary season, and Representative Don Young had a challenger whose name escapes me at the moment, but was challenging him certainly as a conservative. What surprised me is that the healthcare question had gotten to the point that this guy, a very conservative guy challenging Don Young, supposedly a little bit from the right even, was saying we need to look at a national answer to healthcare because it is impossible for businesses to grow under private healthcare. And I thought, if this is going to be like a mainstream thought, this is a pretty fundamental shift in how we view the way healthcare is administered and paid for, if we're looking at it as a hindrance to business growth and for governments and any other entity to be able to just stay afloat.
It impacts everyone,
yeah,
for sure. You know, I'm not going to dive into what my own personal philosophies on how we should approach healthcare as a nation. But something needs to change because mm-hmm. it is not sustainable long-term for the country.
Well, and we, you know, just in terms of talking about numbers, we've been talking about these investment funds that, as you know, something that's just totally on fire, you're able to peel off 5% a year. You're talking about inflation going up 2% a year. These are the numbers that you hear about year over year increases. And then you get to insurance and 23% is the year over year increase. It's just a completely different universe that insurance exists.
Well, and I should be clear though, the 23% was their initial
offer to
the city, and it happens every year that we negotiate that down to something again that we consider more reasonable.
Well, that's the other part that I don't get, and I'll wear my host hat here. If there's a cost to it, how much can you negotiate that? I mean, here's the point at which we make money. This is our price for this product. That's the price. How much can you really negotiate with that? And if you negotiate down a significant amount, you know, how real was that first number to begin with? Anyway.
Well, I'll say on that, you know, it's something that you see in healthcare across the board. You know, when you want to have a service provided by a healthcare provider, understanding, you know, getting that peek behind the curtain and understand what that's really going to cost you is extremely difficult. Same thing with insurance. We get very little insight. We don't get to look behind the curtain and see what our true costs are. They just tell us, well, you're more expensive now than you were the year before and you need to pay more. But we don't really get a look at those numbers to be able to negotiate with them from a position of knowledge. We're just negotiating to try to get to what we consider reasonable.
And with no frame of reference as to what a floor or a ceiling is. And that's once in a while you'll see a story come out that took some hard look into to figure out, you know, at one hospital in one place and another hospital in another place providing the same service, and there'll be, you know, 1,000%, literally 1,000% difference in price. And you go, how is that even possible? And there's a very large industry devoted to keeping those numbers a little bit behind the curtains, I think.
Yes.
Moving along from insurance talk with Paul Ostrander, Kenai City Manager. We've been talking a lot about the budget on this week's Kenai Conversation, talking about some of the different funds that the city has and some changes in that area as well. We mentioned the airport fund and some of those things. I want to talk a little bit about the airport because, as anyone who's driven by recently knows, lots of work going on and a little bit of history uncovered as that project was kicked off last fall. Bring us up to speed. What's happening at the airport and how that project's going?
Well, it's going well now. There were a few bumps in the road initially, but they are really getting after it now. So they're beginning to work on the outside, which they were unable to during during the winter. If you were inside the airport during the winter, you saw that about half the airport was unavailable because we were trying to work on the inside as much as possible. The lounge is currently closed, which is disappointing to some folks I know, but we're working to get them open as quickly as we can again. So it actually is progressing really well. We're really excited about the outcome of it. You know, it was something that was badly needed, and there's virtually nothing within that airport that isn't being touched through this project. So what we're going to end up with is a terminal that is more or less rehabilitated to the point where it's a new facility, and it should serve the residents of the borough extraordinarily well for the next 30 years.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, you know, what is the, because we've been talking so much about capital projects and long-term investments in infrastructure, and do you, I guess, when you plan a project like that, to what degree are you planning for growth in the airport itself? I mean, obviously, that's part of the plan, and how do you, that's how you make a decision to rehabilitate rather than expand or these sorts of things, but is there a lot of growth projected for the airport over that same amount of time? What's that picture like?
You know, there's not a significant amount of growth that's projected. We do have an airport master plan that looks into the future for the next 20 years, and we don't anticipate that there'll be any need for expansion based on what we see now. Now, if you have an LNG project start or something like that, there's a possibility that you would need to see expansion of the airport, although actually we did look, of course, into what the impacts of an LNG facility would be, and the reality of that is it would probably actually be a separate terminal that would primarily be focused on supporting the LNG facility. So we base the decisions on this rehabilitation on the airport master plan and what those projections are. And actually, there is just a very small expansion to the airport that is occurring through this project, but it's relatively minor.
Has, in terms of traffic through the airport, is that number staying relatively the same, or does it move a lot year to year?
You know, it's relatively consistent. You know, enplanements, it varies about 100,000 enplanements a year through the airport. So I think this year we're actually projecting slightly lower than that, 93 or 94,000, but relatively consistent.
When you see a number like that, I'm curious, just, you know, from a standpoint of someone who looks at these numbers in a lot of different ways from a lot of different angles, are you able to see, you know, X amount of emplanements per year and understand sort of what that translates to in a budget sense? You know, that's good for the airport or that's bad for the airport, those sorts of things?
Oh, certainly for the airport, there's a direct impact,
right?
Because, you know, funding in a lot of cases is based on emplanements. But I think that actually emplanements are a really good indicator beyond just the airport. I think it's an indicator of the general economy of the area. When you see emplanements start to dip, that means there's less people flying, there's less activity. And when you start to see that rebound, which, you know, if you look at the emplanements over the last 4 years, it really reflects accurately what you see in the state economy. We saw a dip over the last 3 years, and it looks like it's steady now, and maybe it's going to start going up a little bit. So I think it's an indicator of the economy in general.
You know, that's interesting because there's one side of the coin, and then another side of the coin we were talking about earlier, sales tax is up. And so are there things that we can attribute an increase in the city's sales tax revenue to?
You know, I wish we could pinpoint it exactly.
And and really develop that, yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, I feel like there's kind of a general sense of optimism. People are clearly out there spending money that they weren't a year ago. So I think there's a general sense of optimism. Now, whether or not that changes based on some of the discussions at the state and even borough level, you know, time will tell. But I think what we've seen over the last three quarters anyways is people are more optimistic and they're out there spending money.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. When a big portion of your revenue is based on sales tax, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Another thing, you know, kind of looking ahead, it's going to be not too terribly long. We mentioned the personal use fishery fund earlier. Not going to be too terribly long until we see the dip netters coming through the city gates, as it were. Any big changes in plans for the PU fishery this year? I know that, you know, every year after in the fall, after the fishery is over and things have settled down a little bit, there's kind of a triage and a going through of how things went and how things didn't. And then a little bit closer to the season, we do a little bit of the same thing and take a look at the year ahead. But what are our thoughts at this point?
Yeah, we're beginning to recruit for those summer employees that'll be supporting the fishery. We've ramped back just a little bit in as far as some of the services that we're going to be providing, but there are services that we can ramp up very quickly if we mm-hmm. do see participation rates higher than what we anticipate. You know, participation last year was down almost 35%.
Right.
Revenues associated with the fishery were down significantly. The personal use fishery fund actually took over $150,000 hit last year. So we did ramp back a little bit of this in anticipation that participation probably isn't going to be as low as it was last year, but we're probably not going to see a return to what participation was 4 or 5 years ago when it was significantly higher.
Than right. And well, and that's, again, one of those things that you can correlate almost directly with what's, you know, what are the projections for sockeye returns? And that's a very good indicator as to what kind of a dip net season you might have. Yeah.
Right. And it's also been interesting to watch the timing of that sockeye run in that last year.
Yeah.
50% of that sockeye run came in August, which clearly doesn't help the personal use fishery because mm-hmm. it's not open in August. So participation was down because only 50% of the run came in July. Now, is that a trend that's going to continue? You know, time will tell. But if it is, the state might actually have to consider shifting the season for the personal use fishery.
I was going to say, is that something that the city, I mean, obviously the city is paying attention to that as a sort of a natural phenomenon, but in terms of policy and from an economic standpoint, is that something that the city would be paying attention to? And as those conversations, if they come up at a board of fish level, for instance, is that something the city would be interested in having a voice in?
You know, potentially. You know, the council has shown a lot of interest in participating in that board of fishery process.
If they could just figure out whether or not to have the meetings here.
Right. Do we want to get started? That
That's another one for another day.
So, you know, if that came up, you know, it would be interesting to see if council chose to engage, but I would anticipate that there might be some interest there.
There's been some effort the last few years, and I know, you know, last year was kind of a down year in general for dip netting, but there's been some effort the last few years to try to figure out some different ways to get a little more revenue out of all this increased traffic through Kenai in the summertime. And how would you characterize those efforts? Are those efforts kind of ongoing? Because there are some things that have been tried, and you know, it's kind of a little bit of a trial and error thing, it seems like, to figure out what works, what doesn't, what are their appetites for?
Yeah, we're continuing to look at ways that we can encourage those folks that are participating in the fishery to come into town and check out what we have to offer. You know, the DipNet app was something that we put in place a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Utilization of that is significant.
Yeah.
I think we had 400,000 page views or something last year. So it's certainly significant, but how does that translate into getting people into town? That's what we've been trying to figure out, the best way to do that, you know, providing some ads for those folks that are on the DipNet app to show them what's available, having a calendar on there that shows community events that occur while they're here. Those are things that we've tried, and it's really difficult to quantify the impacts of those efforts. That's the difficult part. So is it having an impact? I'm certain that it is. How significant of an impact? I don't know. And there's other things that we consistently look at. You know, what can we do to promote the city basically while these folks are here, and we'll continue to work on those, you know, over the years.
Well, and it's one of those things that, you know, if there were a silver bullet answer to how do you maximize sort of getting a profit or maximize revenue generation out of this 3-week window in July, if there were a silver bullet to that, I'm sure it would have been found by now. It's such an interesting demographic of folks who come down here, because so many of them come down, and the whole point behind the personal use fishery is self-reliance. And so you get so many people participating in that who are not just being self-reliant in terms of filling their freezer with fish, but self-reliant for that weekend when they're on the beach and came down with coolers full of stuff. And it'd be nice if they picked up their groceries here instead of in Anchorage.
Yeah, and like I said, there's certainly no silver bullet that anyone's found so far. Maybe there is a silver bullet out there, though, and we'll continue to look for it. You know, whether we ever find it, we'll see.
We'll see. Well, step one is just making sure there's always some fish to come back. That's step one.
Right. And the outlook this year actually does look positive.
You know, it does, yeah. Year,
so we're hopeful that it'll be a strong run, not just for the personal use fishery, but it benefits the entire area.
You know, other things around town I wanted to talk about, last week, rather, a major announcement from the Kenaitse tribe about some investments they're making in Old Town and even beyond Old Town. And I guess just curious what your thoughts are about, I mean, that's a massive investment that we heard about, $10 million for a new education facility, and then a lot of renovations to buildings in Old Town, another $1 million bucks or so for some projects there. What are your thoughts on that?
We're really excited about it. I mean, we continue to work on improving and the relationship with Kenites, and we've made really good steps in that direction over the last year, I believe. But yeah, they've been sharing their progression of those plans as they've gone through them with the city. You know, we've had multiple meetings with them, and yeah, their Head Start educational complex and their community center or their rec center that they're, as mm-hmm. they're calling it, you know, those are great. I mean, they're going to create jobs in the city. And you know, it's utilization of that lot there that I think has been a long time coming. I'm really excited to see something productive go on that parcel.
Well, and that's another thing in talking about jobs, to have you know, kind of a non-governmental entity like that. We heard in the presentation that the Kenites officials gave at a Chamber of Commerce meeting recently how quickly they've outgrown some relatively new buildings. And so I'm sure as from a city manager standpoint, any time that you have any organization coming and talking about outgrowing space, that's a good thing.
Yeah, again, we're excited for their projects, and we're very supportive of what they've got going here in the city. I think it benefits us a lot.
Another relatively new area, and we're seeing some development on this in Soldotna, and I kind of just wanted to take kind of a broad look at this, is the cannabis industry in and around Kenai, and a few more stores have popped up, and I know coming up soon with the Planning and Zoning Commission, they're looking at potentially some changes there in terms of on-site consumption, which is a change that has been made at the state level, allowing for that if a municipality would choose to do so. How's the cannabis industry doing in Kenai?
Well, like you said, there's a few stores popping up here and there, you know, not only in Kenai, but I think borough-wide, a lot. You saw a significant bump in the cultivation side of things,
yeah.
And that seems to have calmed down significantly. Now we're seeing a few more retail stores pop up here and there. I think it's just finding that natural balance of where it's going to work for that industry, and certainly the city of Kenai's got a portion of that.
Has there been any issue, I mean, in terms of law enforcement concerns, those sorts of things, as this industry has you know, gone from baby steps into taking a little bit bigger steps now?
You know, in talking to Chief Ross, there's really been no indication that there's been any increase in crime associated with it. So, you know, we haven't really seen anything from the city perspective.
And then I wanted to get to that on-site consumption portion of it, because that's a pretty fundamental shift sort of. I mean, first of all, just in the fact that these businesses had gone, you know, of course existed forever in some form. Now they actually have storefronts, and now, you know, there's a public consumption component to that. I'm sure that you'll enforce whatever the city council decides, but I mean, just from an administration standpoint, is that really a big deal? It's just kind of another layer of paperwork as a business goes through the application process, right?
Yeah, for the city, it's really, there's no additional paperwork, you know, and it is being considered by Planning and Zoning Commission, I believe, maybe next week, and then
the 23rd, I think, yeah,
and then in front of the council again after that. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that discussion goes and which direction the council ultimately decides to go. But you know, as far as administration of that from the city perspective, It's going to be a non-issue.
Yeah. Another kind of development that's grabbed a few headlines is the addition of a dog park in the city of Kenai. And for folks who aren't aware, where is that potentially planned for, and what's that looking like? Is the one in Soldotna has proven to be quite popular.
Yeah. So it's located over adjacent to Dobbin Spec Pond.
Okay.
Right across from the Beacon facility, the fire training facility.
Mm-hmm.
And that property was cleared this winter. And they're having the community group that's really been driving this is meeting as a group again here in the very near future. I wish I had that date, but I don't have that date in front of me. So they're going to be meeting again and figured out next steps and plans to get that completed. And there's a lot of momentum behind it and a lot of community excitement about it. And that's the thing I really appreciate about it so much, is that this really has been a community-driven effort. And, you know, the city has been certainly supportive, but these folks are really driving it themselves.
Well, and there are a couple of different examples of that around the city of Kenai that you can point to. And you know, the results are in various states of completion. I mean, Field of Flowers, I think, is one that you could point to as being largely community driven and a nice thing to have in a community. The dog park is one, and then a more recent effort to expand a bike trail through the along Beaver Loop Road, and that's another community driven thing. The city may or may not have to take a bigger role in that down the line, but again, ideas and sorts of trying to find ways to invest in the community and bring things that aren't here already, instead of the council decreeing things be done. Hey, how about if we do this?
Yeah, there are multiple examples, like you say. The other one that I think we're all excited about is Doc Hansen has pushed for the the historic doctor's cabin that's going to actually be located next to the visitor's center, and that's something he's been pursuing for a couple of years, and that's going to come to fruition here this summer as well. You know, it's just another example, like you said, of a community member or a group of community members getting together, trying to make our community a better place.
Well, Paul Ostrander joining us on the Kenai Conversation this week, talking about some of the more recent happenings and goings-on around the city of Kenai. Started off the hour talking about the budget and wanted to kind of bring it around back to that a little bit as we're sitting now, have recently held a work session on the budget and gone through and heard from all the departments about their plans for the upcoming year and different things that they're looking at. For folks who maybe haven't been engaged in the process yet, what is there still to look forward to? What's kind of a timeline coming up and what can we expect in the coming weeks?
So the budget ordinance itself will be introduced at the May 1st meeting with council, and then the hearing on the budget will be on the 17th. So, of course, the fiscal year ends June 30th, so the budget as passed for FY 2020 will then take effect on July 1.
Yeah, and that's always a stock standard. It's the accounting version of how the year goes. Yeah, so we know those dates. I don't know about you. I'm certainly ready for July 1st, one way or the other, all these budget stories and all this stuff. One thing we haven't gotten to, and I wanted to talk about a little bit, we talked about kind of the relationship between the city and the state in terms of budget issues. We didn't really talk too much about, from a borough standpoint, the borough and the city, because And correct me if I'm wrong in sort of trying to paint it this way, but there is some isolation between the borough and the city in terms of their budget things, because the city, you know, a municipality within the borough, largely especially a place like Kenai, first class city, handles so much of its own thing. Even though you're in the borough, there's not a ton of back and forth and that kind of thing. They're pretty isolated from one another in that sense.
Yeah, so we're actually home rule.
Right,
so,
home rule, excuse me, yes.
Home rule city, and so because of that, we have a significant amount of autonomy.
Right.
And there's certainly a relationship between the borough and the city, and we do get some grant funding from the borough. Senior services, for one, is a grant that we receive from the borough. I think the more direct correlation between the two is really the decisions that the borough makes oftentimes impact our ability to do things. For example, if the borough were to significantly increase sales tax on a borough-wide perspective. So the borough sales tax is charged within the city of Kenai, and then any sales tax that the city has is on top of that. So if the borough were to significantly increase sales tax because they need to support education, for example, that would probably limit the ability of the city to raise sales tax, say, to support bonds to build the bluff erosion project. So there's maybe not a direct impact, but it limits our ability to provide additional revenues through taxes, depending on what the borough does.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that absolutely came up, you know, in the last year or two as the borough has had its own deficit issues and the on again, off again conversation about different revenue proposals. Sales tax was one that city managers definitely had some thoughts about. Are there other things, you know, paying attention to what the borough's finances are like? Are there other things from a city, purely from a city perspective, that you're kind of keeping your thumb on the pulse of? Sales tax is certainly one that has a direct impact, but are there others?
You know, at this
like,
point,
like a bed tax or anything like that?
At this point, there's nothing specifically there that we're looking at, because the bed tax is something that, you know, our council was supportive of pushing it on a borough level. But as far as I know, that's not a discussion at the borough level right now. So, you know, it's not really something that we're looking at. So right now, you know, I will tell you, it's fascinating to watch the goings on at the borough, you know, because there's a lot of people that are really upset about the cuts in education, as you know, and I was actually at the assembly meeting a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, 2.5 hours of testimony from primarily educators or parents of kids that are in the school system that were testifying there. So not necessarily impacting the city, but it's something that we watch with interest, because potentially there are impacts to the city based on how the borough chooses to handle some of their shortfalls.
Sure, and you could imagine, you know, a situation potentially where, you know, what if Nikiski Middle High School closes down and those students are now becoming coming into the city of Kenai to do things? That's something that would have to be considered, certainly. Yeah, that would be a big change.
Yeah. Well, and actually there was one proposal out there to close Kenai Middle School
right.
as well. And that would be something that would directly impact the city. And, you know, we certainly hate to see KMS, it's been there for 50 years or whatever, go away. So that would impact us, and we'd certainly hate to see it go. We also understand that the school district, there's certain things that they're going to have to do if they're going to look to cut costs. So,
yeah, that's again, that's a whole other conversation unto itself, the education part. You also brought up, and I would be remiss if we didn't try to squeeze this in as we're kind of rounding out the hour here, the bluff erosion project. There seemed to be, at the beginning of the year, it seemed to have been some bigger steps taken in the bluff erosion project, and it seemed like we're maybe kind of getting somewhere on that thing here a little bit. Where are we at?
Well, huge announcement on the 10th of this month, and that the long-awaited director's report was approved by the Corps of Engineers. So that was really what I have been working on since I've been the city manager at the city. So 2 years and 4 months ago when I started, and it was actually had been worked on since 2015. So almost a four-year window to get this done. So it was finalized on the 10th of April. Huge step forward for us. The next step would be design, and we're pushing to get that started as quickly as we possibly can so we can get that designed, and then ultimately the next step would be the final objective, which would be construction of the project.
And you know, something you and I have talked about this before is you know, there's such a huge economic portion of this, because that's literally land that the city of Kenai has that has fallen away over the years, a significant amount of land that's just simply doesn't exist. And it's land that used to have homes and businesses. And as we've talked earlier, you know, the Kenaichi tribe is trying to reestablish itself in Old Town. And that's an area that you would like to see not just continue to slide into the ocean slowly over time.
Yeah. I mean, capital investment has rightfully so been very limited in Old Town for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because why would you spend capital dollars building a new restaurant or a retail store or anything, really, when you're losing 3 feet of bluff per year? So if we can stabilize that, I think you will see a renewed interest in investing in Old Town, because it is an incredible part of our city that really has been underutilized, and I think largely because that bluff continues to erode.
Very good. Paul Ostrander joining us this week on the Kenai Conversation. And with just a couple of minutes left, I guess I'll just leave you with sort of closing thoughts for this year's budget process for the city of Kenai. You know, folks want to get involved, or things that folks ought to be thinking about as this project kind of winnows down and we head to the finish line.
Okay. Well, actually, before I dive into the budget, one more
sure.
thing on that bluff erosion project.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I told you that, you know, we've got that director's report approved on April 10th. Senator Murkowski was absolutely crucial in getting that over the finish line, and her support of this project has been enormous. On top of that, Senator Sullivan has been extremely supportive. Without the congressional delegation really helping out the city of Kenai throughout this process, we would not be where we are today. So I want to make sure I got that in there so folks knew how helpful they have been. It's been really phenomenal, the level of support that they provided.
It's one of those projects that, you know, when you stretch something out for 20, 30 plus years, there are so many opportunities for the ball to get dropped, and you have to start that process completely over. And a project like this is never going to be a quick thing to be done to begin with. But then when you think about all the opportunities there are to have to stop and restart, to finally get to a point where we're actually putting pens to papers and it's time to start thinking about actual design, you're right. That's a big step.
It is.
So yeah, final thoughts on the budget, and as we again head toward that finish line.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, the budget ordinance will be introduced on the 1st of May. There'll be a hearing on the 17th. It's an opportunity for the public to come in and weigh in again on what they feel about the budget. The budget is available now. If you go to the city's website, if it's not up now, it should be up very, very soon, so that folks can take a look at what's in the budget itself. And we always welcome the input of residents, and in particular, you know, what type of services do they find important. And again, I will say that the budget that's been proposed is a very small increase. If you were actually to take away some of those costs that are out of our control, like we talked to with healthcare, you would have actually see a budget that was reduced. However, none of the services that we provide have been impacted in any ways. It's really been gained strictly through efficiencies or restructuring of departments. So we're very happy with the budget as it stands, but always would like the public to provide input.
And they'll be able to take a look at that on the city's new website.
Yes, and the new website is a huge improvement. I don't know if you've taken a look at it.
I have seen it, and quite a, speaking of steps forward.
Yeah, Jamie Hines, our city clerk, was kind of the driver behind that, and she had a group of city employees that helped her redesign that, and it really turned out well.
The previous website was perfectly functional, had tons of great information on it. Looked like it came from 1995.
Yes, which I think it did.
Well, Paul Ostrander, again, city manager of the city of Kenai, thank you so much for spending some time with us and walking us through the budget process, and thanks for being here.
All right. Thank you, Shailen.